I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Sports Reporters Podcast on a Monday morning, and we welcome you to it. We do this twice a week, Mondays and Fridays, and gives us a nice opportunity to wrap up the things that happened over the weekend. And, of course, I think the NCAA tournament show just ended. I don't know.
Oh,
it might still be going on. They might be doing the post-the-wrap. The longest tournament show in history, the most alphabetical tournament show in history, has finally revealed the brackets.
And the dumbest tournament show in history.
We'll get to that part. The brackets for the NCAA tournament, and there weren't really any surprises in the number one seeds, Virginia and Villanova and Xavier and Kansas, although a lot of people think that none of those four teams will end up winning this NCAA tournament, which is really,
oh, really
wide open.
A lot of people think that, huh?
Well, some people.
Well, Dick Vitale picked Michigan State, and they're a number three seed. So, what do we think of what we saw?
I think we all need to identify how many teams do we honestly think it's been a lot of talk this year, and I've been doing a lot of it about it's wide open, it's wonderful. But when it's all said and done, I've got down to eight teams that I think we could win.
What are they?
Well, in no particular order, they are Virginia, they are Villanova, Purdue, Kansas, that's probably the shakiest one, Duke, Michigan State, North Carolina, and a current hot team, Michigan. Then I got another category of dangerous teams, but those are my eight. Virginia, Villanova, Purdue, Kansas, Duke.
I hope
Michigan
Kentucky's
State,
at the
UNC.
Top of your dangerous list.
They are. Thank you, Michael. They are. Along with Arizona, you can't dismiss them when they got a player like Ayton. And always dangerous and annoying to play and besides, what would a tournament be without Huggy Bear and his ever growing wardrobe?
You know what? West Virginia. I watched the West Virginia Kansas game. West Virginia should have won that. They had one really bad stretch at the second part of the second half. Bobby, the fascinating thing to me, and you watch the games that are played with these selections every year. It is so clear that the NCAA and this selection committee don't want Arizona to go very far because they don't want that narrative to have any sort of legs in their big dance euphoria. Okay, so what they've done now, and the funny thing is, for all the times they didn't want Calipari to do anything, now they're rooting for John Calipari if they both win their first round games to take out Arizona in the second round, and then they've got Virginia looming over there. They don't want Sean Miller. They don't want DeAndre Ayton. They do not want this team anywhere close, certainly to the Elite Eight, and absolutely to the Final Four.
This is the layout from there over in the South. So Arizona opens against Buffalo. If they win that game, they got to play the winner of Kentucky-Davidson. Assume that's Kentucky. So like you say, second round game, Kentucky. If they somehow knock off Kentucky, then they have to win out of the bracket of Virginia and Creighton and Kansas State. So before they even get to that bracket final to try to get to the Final Four, which, as you say, Cincinnati is the highest ranked on the other side.
And are really good, by the way, Mitch.
Yeah,
and
really
Cincinnati
good.
Is really good. Yeah,
they'd have to go through basically three top 10 teams just to get to San Antonio. Was there any team that we saw here that you felt kind of got screwed by this process?
Oh yeah,
you mean,
that's too far at the bottom. I mean, like where they ended up getting put. That, you know, I was surprised that Michigan State was the number three seed. They got a tough road to go now, even though they get to play at home basically in the first round. But you know, Duke would loom for them in the third game, and I was a little surprised that they were that low because there are a lot of people feel they're like the fourth best team in the country. What about
some
other
ones? Only in terms of placement, there was some talk about why Duke and Carolina, not one of them, couldn't get to stay in the East.
Yeah,
and that other than that, you know, Carolina gets shipped out west, which I think is a winnable region for sure for them.
And by the way, Bobby, before, and this is a sidebar to the story of the tournament, but we're going to talk a fair amount about Duke. Duke has one of the best players in the country, Marvin Bagley. Mitch, Bob was saying the other day that Marvin Bagley has enough game to do the kinds of things that, like, right, Danny Manning did 30 years ago exactly when he carried Kansas all the way. But if you saw the Duke-Carolina game, Bob and Mitch – Grayson Allen is the slowest learner in college basketball. That was a dirty, cheap shot play. It absolutely deserved a flagrant foul. Everybody says, oh, it happens under the basket all the time. It didn't happen under the basket. It happened with a kid running down court and did not expect to be basically tripped. And the saddest part of all of it, well, I guess not shocking, was to hear Jay Billis give him a pass on television and then Coach K to give him a pass after the game.
Yeah, he's truly incorrigible. That just proves it, that after all this time he would do a thing like that. It's indefensible.
You said, Mike, or Bobby, that Marvin Bagley's got that kind of talent. This is something to consider, especially in a year where there doesn't seem to be a preeminent favorite. Who is the most gifted, most talented player in college basketball? And can that single player, over the course of six games, carry his team that far? I mean, is there a clear consensus
powerful destructive force, the heir to all that Chamberlain, Shaq, I mean, all the great stuff. It's Ayton. Ayton's a monster.
Yeah, that's Ayton. It, Mitch. That's
Ayton's
the dirty
the guy.
Little. Yep, that's okay. That is the truth of this tournament. That Ayton may very well be the best player in college basketball, even though he won't win Player of the Year, and he might very well be the first player taken in the NBA draft.
I don't think Trae Young is going to carry Oklahoma too far, but you could make an argument that he's a great player. Bagley. You know, you hear about Bagley, you hear about Bridges over at Michigan State. I've watched Bridges play for Michigan State. He's got a lot of talent, and he's on a good team, but he's not a dominant player. He's just not. He doesn't have that thing in him that says, I'm taking the game over. He's got a lot of skill, but he'll disappear at moments. He'll deflect to teammates. I would have thought by his second year that would have gone because, he came back. There's a lot of talk about him going to the NBA in the first place. And that's one of the reasons why when I'm sort of projecting this thing, and I hate that. This is something that all sports writers get stuck with. It's like, do your bracket, make your predictions. It's like you're just throwing yourself on the guillotine to get chopped up by your readers who are all going to claim that, you're an idiot when you made that selection. Because, of course, you don't know what they picked ahead of time, but they want to tell you, how could you possibly have picked this? But it's one of the reasons that I'm not picking Michigan State to go to the Final Four. I may be proven wrong because they're not consistent like that. He doesn't have that fire, at least not yet, to take it over. Now, Ayton maybe does. I don't know. Maybe at Duke you see something different during the tournament. You never count Duke out in a tournament. But one or another going to knock one another out of here because Duke's going to have to play Michigan State to get to the conference.
Mitch, I will give you the wisdom of my mentor and our colleague, Mr. Ryan, who once said, I am not in the business of prognostication. I am in the business of rhetoric. Okay, so anytime anybody ever asks me a question about who do you think is going to win, I say, wait a minute, you're not going to bet off of what I'm about to tell you.
Right.
Because if you do, you're insane. Okay, because your opinion is as valid as mine. And Mitch, the thing about Bagley, getting back to Bagley is, and we talked about this on Friday, Bob, I think you agree, the most impressive performance we have seen in the last week or so is what Bagley did to Notre Dame in the ACC tournament, 33-17, and showed you all the possibilities. But then you saw when they went up against North Carolina, and by the way, he it's not like he played like a slob, 19-13 against Carolina. But they did make it much harder for them, and the better teams will make it harder for him as this thing goes along. But I'll tell you one. Of all these players, including Ayton, Mitch, I agree with Bob. The one who could rise up and put a team on his back is Marvin Bagley.
Well, in that case, you got to give him good odds.
We got a fascinating X factor, and I just wish it had been able to get into action a little bit earlier. But Michael Porter, and now he's here, and how much he can inject himself into this situation to be a dominant player that people think he's going to be is interesting. And they have a winnable. They're an 8-9 game, so that's always the ultimate toss up game anyway. After which, they would run up against Xavier, who I think we all agree, we're it's not is a no one's going to expect them to get to the Final Four, Xavier. No. I'm sorry.
And I think Villanova got a good deal considering that they were the number two team in their own conference, but they're basically not only number one seed, you could argue they were given, you know, the most preferential placement of where they are. I mean, on their bracket on the East, really only Purdue looms as, and that wouldn't happen until the fourth game as any kind of
Alabama's
real
good, Mitch. Alabama's good. Alabama.
Yeah, they're not Villanova.
No. But Bob, would you be shocked if Alabama if they win their first?
I was going to mention when we were talking about players that they're sitting there as a nine. But they've got a fascinating, a really, really good player in Colin Sexton, and he's capable of being that guy that could get everybody's attention. There's always somebody that rises up in the non-center category and a guard category, and he could be that guy. They're a dangerous team.
And by the way, you know, we've spent a fair amount of time talking about Duke. North Carolina is quietly loaded. They came within one basket, Mitch, of having six guys in double figures in the Duke game. Okay, and that game looked like it was going to be a beatdown before they kind of dropped their hands towards the end of the game. I believe that up and down their roster, North Carolina might be the most talented team in the country, and. You know, you look at where they are, Mitch, okay? They play Lipscomb to play the winner of Texas A&M Providence. The rest of the teams, and I really, you know, I'm a John Beilein groupie, okay? So I will never dismiss Michigan. Houston, San Diego State, Michigan, and Montana over there. I think of all these elite teams, Bob, I think you agree too. I mean, I think North Carolina might have the best path.
Well, they also have the thing that everyone wants in the March, and that is a veteran guard of stature and they've got Joel Berry, and Joel Berry has already proven to the world how good he can rise to this occasion, and he very well may do it again.
Well, clearly already what we've talked about for the last 5 or 10 minutes, you know, there's nobody that's dominant. There's nobody that you're saying can't lose. There's nobody you say is a sure thing to get even to the Final Four. I mean, there are trip ups along the way, potentially, for anybody that you would pick. But that's the way of this tournament always runs.
Here's the question then for us. Okay, I'm going to throw this one on. Put this on the table, gentlemen. If they all played their A game, who wins? Who's the best team at its best? Who's the best of the best? What team do you like playing its A game above all else?
All A games, everybody, Virginia. All A, everybody's A game, bring your best, Virginia.
I go Villanova, and I think Villanova Virginia would be the most fascinating matchup of the best slow team and the best fast team. That'd be great.
I have to state this again, and I have all respect for Tony Bennett. You know, even though he's the other Tony Bennett, the job he's done coaching Virginia and bringing them back to elite status in college basketball. Mitch, I hate watching him play, okay? And Mitch, I hate watching him play. And I'm going to tell you this right now. If they somehow do make it to the last Monday night of college basketball, I can almost guarantee you that the game will be played in the 50s, okay? So it will be played slightly north of where great college football title games are played. And Ryan, you know I'm right about this. This is like watching Coach Norman Dale's team in Hoosiers. They have everything except the picket fence play.
I am going to probably have to check myself into some kind of a basketball rehab because I seem to be the one deviant here. I love watching them play because
I saw them
up close and personal last year in Boston, and I said, oh, my God, the offense is so efficient. I like them. They have good players, Guy and Jerome, and I'm sorry. I don't get it. I don't join in
what
this
What don't
chorus.
You get? You don't get how the lack of the lack of fun watching them play.
I like basketball. I think they're exquisite. I think their offense is efficient. I mean, you know, I like up tempo basketball, but I mean, I'm sorry if a team somebody does something as well as they do it, I don't mind it at all. I don't mind. No, I want. Oh, I pay cash money right now to see Villanova and Virginia and for
the. Of all the adjectives that have been lobbed Virginia's way, exquisite is probably not one that's been used often. Bob just broke that one in.
I'm sorry. I'm sticking to my story.
You know what, Ryan? You sound like Red Holtzman talking about what it was like to play in the NBA in the 1950s when he and Sonny Hertzberg, when there was no 24-second clock, and he said we'd stand outside and dribble around and people would leave the arena.
Well, there is a clock now, though, Mike, and they have to put it up at Metro. I just don't understand why people will dismiss these guys that are so good.
No, not people. But me. I'm the one. Not just
people.
It's me.
With all this going on, that selection show, I hate to spend a lot of time talking about
it. It was like watching
sports.
Virginia play. It was like watching – that's what it was, Mitch.
But some things warrant comment. And in light of what has gone on with college basketball in the last weeks and months, and in light of the at least beginnings of a debate of how to spread the equity of what is inside college basketball to the players, or make something fair. You know, there was a beginning of a dialogue of that because these charges in the FBI and all these things were so serious. There was the beginning of some kind of sense of we've got to break this big behemoth apart because it just isn't fair and it's not right and it's billions of dollars on one side and ridiculous rules on the other. And then comes this two-hour Miss America pageant, which basically does exactly, proves everybody's point who's critical of this system, that the bloated, over-attentioned NCAA tournament sits on one end of this teeter-totter and all common sense sits on the other side of it.
Mitch, who do they, as I watched it until I couldn't watch it anymore, and I literally, I just, you could see where they were going. Who was the genius sitting in the production meeting and saying, let's do it alphabetically. Let's do the at-large team. What Bob, remember what it was like when it was a half-hour show. If your team was in the West, okay, you had to wait until they went through the East and they went across the country. This was so boneheaded on so many different levels. It felt like a Super Bowl pregame show, but I kept thinking it until I couldn't watch it anymore. Okay, and who are they addressing? Who did I'm not talking about all the creepy bracket people. Okay, what wonks did they think wanted to see them list the at-large team in a way that made you say, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Yeah. Well, what does Turner do well at sports when you ask yourself, you know, frankly? So I anticipated the disaster, and we certainly got it. I'm not going to disagree with anything anybody's saying here. I'm just going to jump on the pile. Absolutely. It was tedious. It was awful. It was excruciating, but I didn't expect much better.
And a studio audience, is it honestly necessary to have an audience to read names off a thing? Look, when something, I'm a big believer that the NFL draft is the most bloated thing in the history of sports. You know, now that they dragged it out to 4 days when it used to be done in an hour and on a Saturday. But at least in the draft, you have to have, 30 teams or so each come up and say something. You got to give people time to do it. This literally could be achieved in 1 second. We are now posting, especially in today's day of the internet, we are posting the NCAA tournament bracket. It's up. There it is. Now let's start to analyze it. This excruciating revelation kind of thing with a studio audience, it just speaks to the mic. You said, what idiot came up with this? It doesn't matter which idiot. I'll tell you why the idiot. Because they gave him 2 hours he had to fill. Who the hell can fill 2 hours with something that takes a second to do? So you're stretching out. It's like they said about baseball. You know, the critics say about 3 minutes of action stretched into 4 hours of a game. Well, that's what this is. And and this is the first of 14 years they have this thing signed up for 14 years. This arrangement with TBS and CBS. We're gonna be watching this stuff.
Let me tell you what. I'll tell you what, for all of the good decisions, the good business decisions, until they started making a lot of bad decisions, that ESPN has made over time, okay, they could have had this tournament. okay? They could have had this tournament. I forget it was an extremely small amount of money that they wouldn't go past, and CBS found its partner in Turner and did this. But this is a thing that is made for ESPN. Okay, it's they don't have to farm it out. They wouldn't have had to farm it out to five different networks, and to watch this thing. And I keep wondering, Mitch, however many days and nights of broadcasting they will have over a thing that only comes to life for 3 weekends every March and April. Okay, are they must be making money on this thing in this short and concentrated period of time. They must be making money on it.
Well, they don't do things to lose money, but again, I take us back to the beginning. If there is literally that much money going on here that you can sustain a 2-hour ridiculous pile of garbage just to broadcast it, then how do we continue with this system? And the fact that everybody has been muted all of a sudden on what were the issues in college. Is anybody talking about that?
Shocker.
Nobody's talking about that now. All everybody's talking about is this bracket thing.
You know what they did, bitch? You know what they did? They threw a bracket over the whole thing. But in 3 weekends, you'll think, holy moly, you could have fit all the conversation they had about the FBI and everything else into a thimble or a shot glass by this. And by the way, you know what I was saying yesterday? We kind of had some fun after the way they dragged out telling us which four teams were going to be in the college football tournament. That was a Michael Johnson 200 sprint. Right. Compared to what we saw last night.
How about Mr. Rasmussen, the whatever his name is, the committee chairman, with a straight face, looking into the camera or looking into the eye of his interrogator, and saying that the subject of the FBI and the investigations and never came up once in all their discussions.
No,
not misquoting him.
Well, if Mike, that wasn't the only thing heavily hyped yesterday, was it?
Oh, my God. Okay. Listen, everybody knows how much I love golf, okay? I love golf. I love what Tiger Woods did to put in this isn't pejorative, put the whole thing on steroids when he got good 20 years ago, okay? And so it was a wonderful thing to see him be in contention again yesterday. But it was also fabulous watching the whole thing turn into a, you know, teenagers at a Maroon 5 concert. Okay. And afterwards, oh my God. And all I can tell you is that I understand what this has now done to the odds of the Masters. I saw somebody on the Golf Channel say last night, do you think this makes him the favorite to win the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill? And I'm thinking, what? What? Did all of the other talented young players in the world suddenly disappear? It's a great thing. You could see the young guys were happy to have him back. But the idea that this is automatically sustainable, okay? And look out, Butler Cabin. I think everybody is getting way ahead of themselves.
And predictably, Mike, and you know it. You know, I've been this whole Tiger thing in the period of time now since the fall of Tiger. And you know, and all the discussion about what the ramifications are, and meanwhile, all the rise of all these wonderful young players from all around the globe, including now India, it's amazing, right? And I'm saying, you know, there's so many great golfers out there. Can't people get over this? That did they have to have Tiger? And yet, has anybody seen the overnights, Mike or Mitch?
I have not.
I was wondering. I bet you they're good. I bet you they're tremendous. I bet they're going to prove the point
that
people
have
not weaned themselves off the Tiger drug.
Well, but people or broadcasters, there is a difference. All right? If people or broadcasters.
No, the crowds were insane there, Mitch.
Yes, they were. You're right. They were. And I'm asking the question more than I'm answering it. But I do think that one feeds the other. And when broadcasters... You know, quick, go ask anybody who won that tournament yesterday.
Oh.
Nobody's going to be able to tell you. A Brit named Paul Casey, who by a Brit, then that's, to me, like, that's the point. You know, we're longtime watchers of sports, so we can cut the noise out of our heads. To me, the line is, well, he lost to a guy named Paul Casey, all right? He shot a 70. He didn't shoot a 63 on the final day. You know, if he's Tiger Woods and charging from behind, he couldn't overtake a guy named Paul Casey. So to me, that says he ain't all the way back. But, you know, this that's not the way everybody wants to look at it. This was, did you see Tiger Woods almost win yesterday? No one would say, did you see Paul Casey win yesterday? Now, a lot of that comes from the broadcasters. People get crazy because they are told to get crazy. Every single one of these guys drinks this Kool-Aid, and they talk about, here comes Tiger. It's Tiger time. This is when he does it. Look, he's got the red shirt on again. You know, wow, I've never seen a guy get so much mileage by just putting on a color on a Sunday. He's got the red shirt. That means he's going to take it over.
Can I tell you, by the way, I had to inform my the Lupica boys yesterday and my dear friend Mike Greenberg. Do you know the history of the red shirt, by the way? The red shirt, it was Arnold Palmer's. And because he was told in another world that red would show up the best on magazine covers like Sports Illustrated. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was in the days of magazine covers. Okay.
And so, Sports Illustrated.
So it's Tiger Red. No, it's Arnold Red, but not for those reasons. Mitch, okay, here's all I know about the ratings. Okay. The Saturday rating for a third round was the biggest in like over 10 years since the Bridgestone in 2006. I'm reading a thing here. Okay. There's no question that he is a great attraction. But Mitch, I was joking on Twitter yesterday morning. I kept saying, God, I just hope somebody tells the NBC announcers that Tiger's close to the lead, because, you know, I just would hate for that. Wouldn't you have hated for something like that to just slip through the cracks and miss a lot of his shots? Okay. Because every time he twirled a club, I felt like I was up to speed, right? I felt like I was up to speed.
I have a question for you gentlemen. I was not in a position. I was what I saw of it lacked audio, okay? And so my question is, what if any comment was made about Patrick Reed and the idea that he wore red? Because I had only
they did
one
talk about it.
They
did talk about it, and they talked about it, how it was they didn't put it this way. It was an example of Patrick Reed's swagger, okay? Now, I want him to play well. It's great for the sport if he plays well. But I'll tell you something. This idea that suddenly at the age of 42, his swing speed is up to 130 miles an hour, this is weird to me, okay? And also, there's a part of me that believes it's not sustainable. And the one thing Jack Nicklaus said to me a couple of weeks ago when he was analyzing this latest comeback of Tiger's, and obviously before he played as well as he did at the Valspar, was this. He said, I'm worried about him. And I think he's worried about that he's come out of the box firing this way. I mean, but guys, imagine if a 42, you know, this is like if a ball player suddenly his bat speed went crazy at this point in his career. I just wonder if there's a Brigadoon element to this, and it may last, but I worry that it's not going to last.
Well, the timing of this, because it precedes the greatest tournament of them all.
It's a tradition like any other, Mitch, if you've ever watched the commercials.
I watch them. I can't get away from them. this is, you know, it's just perfect timing for this. 3 weeks out from the Masters, and he's now the number three odds player to win the Masters, despite the fact that he hasn't won a major in a gazillion years, and despite the fact that he hasn't won at all in an extremely long time.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. He's the number three. And if he comes close at the Palmer, forget winning it, he'll probably be the two or the favorite to win the thing, because everybody, they either think history repeats or they want history to repeat so badly that they want to make it so. Now, in fairness to Tiger, here's what's impressive to me. 70, 68, 67, 70.
Yeah,
all right? He breaks
absolutely
par in every round. Not one particular day, not one particular shot. Here's what's not impressive to me. On the day that he's supposed to win, he has one birdie and one bogey. Okay?
Two birdies.
You sure?
He rolled in that long putt on he birdied the first
birdies,
hole. He went 4 hours without making another birdie, and then he rolled in
and
a bomb
the 17.
On 17.
On the 17, which is a great shot. You know, a 44-foot putt. I watched it. Great shot. But, okay, it's not. He didn't birdie the back nine. And you know, until you see that type of aggression, he's not the old Tiger Woods, but it doesn't stop people, and they're not going to stop. This is a little bit like we just talked about with the NCAA tournament and March Madness. It is March Madness. It's pre-April Madness for the Masters for him, and we're just going to be inundated with this talk here now. But And I said this on a podcast a few weeks ago when we were talking about him. He's one tweaked back or knee, you know, one of those winces on his face. Oh, he looks a little, he came up a little, hurt there. No. You know, that's, and that's all you're going to hear. And then all of a sudden, he's in a different direction. Mike, you're so right when you talk about his age. He's not made of carbonite. He's 42. And golfers at 42 don't come back for very long.
I don't mean to turn this into inside baseball. This was a good course for him. Even though he's driving the ball better than I ever thought he would again, the less Tiger has to hit drivers, the better off he is. So if he can hit stingers and when he's doing that, it'll be interesting to see as he dials it up and gets to play more courses where he has to hit more drivers. But the thing that was really the most surprising about this and did make me feel like I was in a time machine yesterday was I heard afterwards, well, he didn't have his A game. I used to joke with Phil Mickelson about this. I said, how come when Tiger doesn't win, it's because he didn't have his A game. And when you don't win, you sucked. He goes, welcome to my world. Okay. And so I don't know how much you watch this. Bob said he's watching without the sound on. I was amazed at how timidly he played with it. That tournament was sitting there from 2 o'clock on. The kid from Canada was in the lead. He fell out of there early. Okay. That tournament was sitting there, and he wasn't shooting for pins, okay? He wasn't making putts. And I'm not talking about 44-footers, Mitch. There were 10-footers and 8-footers and 5-footers that he missed. When he got close yesterday, he backed off. That was what the golfer in me saw.
Yeah. Well, and on the last hole, you know, when it was really there for the taking, he came up short. And that wasn't an impossible shot to make. So, I don't want people listening to think, you know, wow, are they trashing Tiger Woods? It's not trashing him. It's wonderful that he's able to. It's remarkable, really. And nobody, we should point this out, nobody doubted Tiger Woods more than Tiger Woods over the course of the last few years. You go and read some of the things that he said about himself. I'm not even talking about golf now. I don't know. Imagine if you couldn't get out of bed in the morning, would you be worrying about winning the Masters? These are quotes from Tiger Woods. So it's not a hater type of thing in any way. It's basically the opposite. It's like, let's not get fooled again and again and again and again. History has shown us that there's a reason it's this many years since he's won a major, this many years since he's won a tournament. And everybody throws that out the window because they want to see something happen. And I think those who cover sports are a little cynical about the desire to see Tiger succeed because some of it is invariably rooted in ratings success and, you know, what's good for the game and what brings him, and not necessarily, what's good for the sport of golf. To me, what's good for the sport of golf is that you celebrate a lot of players because sooner or later, Tiger Woods isn't going to be around. And one of the benefits, I thought, that came out of his sort of absence over the last number of years was the rise of the Jordan Spieths and the Rory McIlroys and all the other players that whose names started to become household because Tiger wasn't there to dominate the entire sport. And now you see the frenzy for this starting all over again, and that's why you probably hear what you hear in our voices.
You know, what remains here is the fact that the Tiger Woods phenomenon is unlike anything else that any of us, three of us for sure, have lived through in our sports experience. To having a discussion of this nature is the only remote thing, would you possibly agree, that would be generated like this would be when Michael Jordan returned after 2 years.
Yeah, away. Yeah, and, that's and fair. That's a fair analogy, Bobby.
Yeah. And you know, the NBA, they were lucky, you know, Houston took advantage of the void and won their two championships fair and square in the competition that they faced. And fine, we can speculate what would have happened if Michael had never left. But I mean, what we're talking about here is just, let's just put it in perspective. It's unlike anything in the history of American sport.
Yeah.
That there's a person that dominate that causes this type of discussion and to the degree that it does.
Here's what was and again, you knew the coverage was going to be giddy. You knew the camera's going to be on him all day long yesterday. And by the way, I'm not making fun of announcers. I love golf. I love Dan Hicks and Faraday and all those guys. I am a wonk. Okay. What was amazing to me is after one tournament of being in contention, one at the age of 42, and you go back through golf history and you see what the expectations are for over 40 golfers, okay? It's why what Mickelson is doing defies the odds, and he even he went 4 years without winning. They acted like everything's order has been restored to the universe, and now he's going to turn into Roger Federer. Once they were on parallel tracks, they were almost in the same point in each other's careers, okay? And then Federer has continued, Tiger has not, for all the reasons which have been well documented. But they act now like Tiger's now going to start playing golf going forward the way Federer has played tennis over the last 15 months. And it's just simply not logical, because here's the thing about Federer. Okay, he's going to be 37 in August, Tiger's 42. He had one basic injury his whole career. He had that one sabbatical because of knee surgery. And Tiger has had so many surgeries in a non-contact sport, you lose sight. And people act like it won't happen to him again. That's not logical.
Yeah, and until it doesn't, you're going to keep hearing this hype. Let's shift over to football for a moment here now. Bobby, you've got an eye on this.
The much anticipated, at least a while back, free agency at NFL, which will begin at 4 p.m. on this coming Wednesday, has certainly been muted for a variety of reasons. But look at all the trades that have already – trading has superseded the possibility of free agency, and we've really only got one gigantic – well, if how big names still hang out there – Kirk Cousins, but after that, it's an underwhelming list of free agents. Would you not agree?
Well, but Kirk Cousins sets a lot of things in motion. For example, I'm reading about Kirk Cousins. I don't know how they get this, by the way. ESPN has a piece up about how much the offers will be for Kirk Cousins from the four major teams that are going to pursue him, literally down to like the 0.4 of the. I was like, how do you guys know this stuff? You know, they've got Minnesota Vikings making him an offer 5 years for $142 million, which boggles the mind that that's Kirk Cousins' money. But yep. What boggled the mind even more is that the Minnesota Vikings have three quarterbacks currently, you know, on their roster, or at least loosely on their roster, that they may all dump all three of them, despite the fact that they got within a breath of going to the Super Bowl with one of those guys and the other two on the bench. And now they want to toss it all to put Kirk Cousins in charge of their team. So, but what happens there, Bobby, is if they do take Kirk Cousins, then Case Keenum and Teddy Bridgewater and all these guys are in play. And if, you know, if the Denver or the Jets don't get Kirk Cousins, then they go after other guys and start. So it, even though he's kind of the biggest name, there's a lot of stuff that's going to float around out there as a result of where he ends up signing. And it is remarkable that a guy, I like Kirk Cousins a lot because I knew him, you know, here at Michigan. He's a great kid, you know, the kind of kid that, you know, at college was doing things off the field with kids in the community and stuff like that without getting any attention for it. Wonderful kid. $142 million for Kirk Cousins? If that doesn't tell you where we are in the NFL here, I don't know.
Mitch,
all the quarterback numbers to blow my mind.
Yeah.
It started when Flacco got his and Stafford got his and I'm amazed.
And Garoppolo got his, you know, for playing six games.
Everybody but the best guy got theirs. Isn't that interesting?
Mitch, several years ago I wrote a book called Mad as Hell, and it was about how sports got away from the fans and how, you know, there might be a way to get it back, which was turned out to be folly. Okay. But one of the long riffs in that book was there is nothing better in the world of free agency than being the best guy out there. Okay. The best guy out there is going to get overpaid. The best guy out there, especially playing the position that we have created, they have created as the most important in all of professional sports. So Kirk Cousins' timing has turned out to be great. And there are some marquee teams who need a better quarterback than they have. The Jets have been looking for 50 years for the new Joe Namath. I'm not saying that Kirk Cousins is going to be the Namath, even though Namath probably has the sketchiest statistics of any quarterback in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The Vikings were knocking on the door, and they obviously don't believe that Case Keenum is going to be the guy that takes them the next couple of steps to the Super Bowl. The Cardinals are foundering, okay? And there is John Elway. John Elway has to be looking at Cousins, Mitch, and thinking this. Wait a minute. We won with Peyton Manning at a time when he couldn't even throw anymore, okay? So can I regroup with which Cousins? 29 years old going on 30? Can I regroup with this guy even if I have to overpay? The answer he's probably giving himself is hell yes.
Yeah. Well, I think Denver and Minnesota look at it as sort of like, if we get him, we can compete now. The Jets and Arizona, who are the other two, are going to have to do a selling case, particularly the Jets, about, you know, we're rebuilding and we're coming back and you want to be a part of this. And, you know, it's worth remembering that Kirk Cousins had a lot of talent down there in Washington for a stretch of time, and they didn't get to the Super Bowl. So just putting Kirk Cousins on your team does not take you to the Super Bowl, but that's the way they look at it. Now, can I ask about another player here? I don't know if I'm the only guy who found, like, this was my kind of knee-jerk reaction, and maybe I'm just too wrapped up in the news. But when I saw Richard Sherman sign, and I guess he negotiates his own deals.
$39 million.
So, sorry, signs at 39. Forget about the money. I saw Richard Sherman sign with San Francisco. So a rival in their, forget about that part, a rival in their own, you know, a division there, and coming from Seattle. Wasn't Richard Sherman one of the biggest critics of the Colin Kaepernick situation? Constantly talking about how NFL owners are idiots, they're blackballing him, whatever. He just signs with the team that started all that. Did anybody find that a little odd for a guy who's controlling his own destiny, negotiating his own deals, you know, talking about the ownership is blackballing this guy, whatever, and he signs right up with San Francisco?
Vengeance is mine, saith this big mouth, okay? And he obviously, that's in the Bible, by the way, Mitch. Vengeance is mine, saying this big mouth, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's it. I forget it.
It's the King Sherman version.
Yeah, as the president would say, I can't remember whether it's 1 Corinthians or 2. And he was out to screw the Seahawks. I think that trumped everything. I mean, I think that trumped everything. He was looking to stick it to the Seahawks. And how dare they, Bob, how dare they, by the way, release a guy who's coming off Achilles surgery?
Right, and 30 years old.
Yeah, and... Well, you know, welcome to the NFL. I mean, I'm always amused by anything that has to do with Richard Sherman. And I'm sure the man from Stanford will have a very eloquent explanation of his motivation, I'm sure.
So. Well, I just thought it was odd, you know, that was the location. And he admitted it was a vengeful thing that he said, I'm like that, you know. Okay, well, yeah. We'll see. You first have to be able to play, which he wasn't doing when he left San Francisco, but it's all going to be very interesting. This all the free agents stuff that's up here, but the quarterback.
And by the way, since we Mitch, you raised the subject of the 49ers and taking a knee and protests and all that. Anybody noticing who Goodell is forcing to take a knee right now in his league? Oh wait, I know who it is. It's Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is now being made to take a knee by this commissioner. Talk about vengeance, okay? They re-up this guy. He's got all of the money. He's got as much power as he ever had. And guys, let me tell you, this is just the beginning with Goodell. He's going to swing it like a club every chance he gets.
What was the fine? $2 million?
$2 million. $2 million.
Legal costs.
And legal cost. You know what? That's the money he's being made to pay for challenging Roger Goodell's commissionership and trying to organize this, I don't know.
Well, it's like in Banana Republics, you know, when somebody tries to organize the coup against the guy and then they're pushed back, then they go and they cut the head off of the guy who organized the coup, you know? And this is, as you say, revenge for daring to try to push Roger Goodell off the throne, and now he's back there and running things. And you know, I'm sure Jerry Jones is the kind of guy though that goes, you know, I'll write a $2 million check, and I won't even feel it. You know, it's almost like, yeah, watch me give you $2 million and see how little this matters to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, but they don't like being shown up, these guys, Mitch. No. They don't. They don't like being shown up in the public square. And Goodell's gone out of his way to do this because why? Because Jones went out of his way to show up, Goodell, and somehow stop the single dumbest gravy train that I can ever remember with anybody's contract in the history of sports, and that is the one that pays Goodell whatever the hell it pays him.
I don't think it's going to shut up Jerry Jones if he thinks $2 million isn't going to take it away from him. All right, before we get to our parting shots, can I remind you and everybody who's
and
listening
you,
to
and
us
you and you.
That Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. That's right, a chef. No more
Does
worrying about
Does he wear
about
like a white hat? Does he have like the whole Wolfgang Pup thing
I believe
going?
The chefs okay. at Freshly all wear white hats.
Okay,
yes.
That's, okay.
And not name badges like fast food places have you wear. No more worrying about having to figure out what you left in the fridge, and especially no mess to clean up afterwards. Freshly chefs source the finest all-natural ingredients they can find and work with nutritionists to ensure their meals are as healthy as possible. How about something like, steak peppercorn,
sure.
grilled chicken risotto, penne bolognese, veggie baked penne, pork carnitas. I'm getting hungry.
Have you
all
had
these
the pork? I don't believe you've had the pork carnitas.
I personally have not had the pork carnitas.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
But the best part about all these meals, and there are more than 30 chef-crafted options, is that they are super healthy. There's no weekly commitment. You get deliveries only when you want them. And there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens, you got a chef-cooked dinner waiting at home. Check out this week's menu, created by Freshly Chefs, and you get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners. That's $25 off plus free shipping. And all you have to do is go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off on your first order.
Hey, Mitch, by the way, you asked this question earlier in the podcast. I think they just covered the last at-large teams alphabetically. But before we get to parting shots, and I mentioned bring this up before, talk about the mighty having fallen in college basketball, okay? How about UCLA and Syracuse playing in the play-in games this year? How about that?
Well, the playing game, of course, is for the 11 and 12 seats, but it's still not dignified.
But UCLA, was one trip to China away from being a favorite, coming into this season. They were supposed to have a good team. And then they went over, took an ill-advised trip. Let that be a lesson, perhaps, to all the schools out there that are thinking about it's not enough to just play within 100 miles of where we are. We need to travel halfway around the world for an exhibition somewhere, and then the kids get caught in the sunglass shop, Bob, and everything changes.
Can I ask, Bob, you may know the answer to this. I actually don't know. How did Dayton become the capital of these games?
People turn out in droves because they knew they could. I won't say guaranteed, but an expected audience. It is a great college basketball town.
Oh no, I know that. I was there.
And they like it. They embrace it. They have made it their own.
Do we think these games enhance the tournament in any? I guess they do. I guess they do.
Well, don't get me started, Mike. I mean, I think the tournament should have just remained at 64. It was fine. The mathematics worked perfectly. The whole flow of it is perfect. They didn't need those extra 4. The only reason that they exist is that the power conferences were demanding more inclusion and more of their mid-level teams getting in, and that's why we have 68 rather than 64. The power conferences exerted their will. But in a better world, there would not be a play-in game. No, not exactly. Absolutely not.
All right. Time for our parting shots, and Bob, take some of that energy and kick us off.
Why am I here? That's the question
it's an
every
existential
basketball
question
referee
sure is,
should
yeah.
ask Metaphysic. Himself before the game starts. The one and only answer is to adjudicate the smooth flow of the game. It is not to make chicken bleep calls to decide games in the final seconds, which is precisely what happened in yesterday's America Athletic Conference championship game between Cincinnati and Houston. Houston's Nura Zana and Cincinnati's Gary Clark jostled a bit for a rebound that Clark controlled. But an overzealous zebra called a ridiculous, let me stress that, R-I-D-I-C-U-L-O-U-S, ridiculous rebound foul with 4.3 seconds left. Rebound fouls at any time are often dubious, and they are criminal when called in the final minute of a close game. Clark made one of two free throws, and that was that. Cincinnati won. Referees should always try their best to let, oh, this is an interesting concept, players decide the game. This ref flunked the test. And you can bet you'll see more of it as the NCAA tournament unfolds.
The haters will hate hearing this, but it is worth noting the way Kentucky just finished its regular season and then won the SEC tournament, that the guy who coaches the team, John Calipari, happens to be a great college basketball coach. Not just a guy who recruits great talent year after year. A great coach. One who takes a new group and almost always makes it as far as the Elite Eight, sometimes a lot further than that. Calipari's teams do three things as gifted as so many of these kids are. They play unselfishly, they play defense, and they are almost always better at the end of the season than they were at the beginning. I've known Cal since he took a UMass team that didn't belong in the Final Four to the Final Four in Jersey. I get what a polarizing figure he is and how unpopular he is with the Joint Chiefs of smugness at the NCAA. But if you can't see how good this guy is at what he does, which is coaching 18 and 19-year-old kids, you're watching the wrong movie.
When you reach a certain age in covering sports, you stop thinking about how you'd like it and accept the way it is. The balanced part of me wishes that fans and media would just concentrate on LeBron James's chances of winning another title with the screwball Cleveland Cavaliers lineup. After all, there's plenty of storyline there. All the new guys, the Kevin Love health issue, is Ty Lue a good enough coach? Can LeBron carry them all through the playoffs? But no, in our current world, where tomorrow is always more interesting than today, the Cavs played in L.A. over the weekend, and all anyone could talk about was LeBron possibly playing in Los Angeles next year. They wooed him. They wowed him. And then, for good measure, the Lakers beat him and the Cavs very soundly. And instead of saying, wow, the Cavaliers have a lot of work to do, the media started speculating if the whooping would impress LeBron enough to think seriously about joining the Lakers soon. I'd like to think this will stop, but who am I kidding? LeBron in La La Land is irresistible to today's fans and media. And even if he does go there, consider this. Yesterday, someone asked LeBron if he would stay in the NBA long enough to play with his son, who is currently 13 years old. And LeBron said, oh yes, he definitely would. So it looks like our speculating isn't ending anytime soon. Thanks for joining us, folks, on this edition of The Sports Reporters. We do this podcast Mondays and Fridays. And if you enjoyed it, leave us a comment. We always enjoy reading those. If you didn't enjoy it, leave us a comment. We enjoy reading those as well. Tell your friends. You can find the podcast anywhere they get their popular podcasts. And until we see you at the end of the week, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.